The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to The Guardian Film Show, where we're raising the curtain on a stage that's stuffed with sex and death and betrayal and drugs. We've got the costumed crime fighters and we have the cavorting showgirls. We're putting the show on right here. Coming up for your edification, Robert Downey Jr. goes for the old saving the world hat trick on Iron Man 3. Patriots and collaborators take a walk in the woods in the Ukrainian drama In the Fog. And then there's the Texas comedy Bernie, in which Jack Black first tolerates the presence of Miss Shirley MacLaine and then guns her down in the garage with Extreme Prejudice. Let's start with The Look of Love, Michael Winterbottom's biopic of Paul Raymond, the Soho-based publisher who milked his client's literary enthusiasms into a £650 million fortune. Catherine Short tripped into town to meet Winterbottom and the film star Steve Coogan.
Mr. Raymond, what makes a good striptease artist?
Well, the girls are, in a sense, actors, and they must persuade the men that they are enjoying the experience. So it's a performance, and they must be convincing.
And how did your career begin?
Well, I'm an entertainer first and foremost. I started out with a mind-reading act, and I soon realised that people like to look at attractive girls, and they liked it even more if the girls had no clothes on.
Soho was his playground, but was also his prison. He's sort of the living embodiment of someone who stayed at the party too long.
Yeah. What do you think the danger of that is?
Of what, staying at parties too long?
What happens?
Steve's got a lot of experience.
You end up dancing on your own, which is a bit sad.
You've been called the king of the keyhole shows.
I like to think of myself as the king of the glamour shows.
It is such a good night to kiss.
You have a whole bunch of stuff that doesn't necessarily fit together as easily as it would have to in a fiction. So you don't have to kind of make everything smooth and obviously kind of straightforward. But in this case, it was part of the tricky balance was like how to not to make you feel like you're bashing people over the head with the idea that if you do, you know, lots of drugs and have lots of sex and have lots of money, then you're going to have to pay it back in some personal way.
This is an opportunity for us to rewrite the cultural history.
It's not Germany, so we'll just...
Mr. Raymond, would you say your work is degrading to women?
No. I'm joined now by Catherine Shord and Henry Barnes. Catherine, this is a labour of love project for Steve Coogan, apparently. He's been wanting to make a film about Paul Raymond for years. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it's a good thing. I mean, it's interesting to think what Steve Coogan might find interesting about Paul Raymond and what sort of he might associate with him. And, you know, what is really going on with this film, I think, is that it's really kind of audacious. It's not very interested in sex or even in nudity or even in titillation and the boundaries between titillation and porn and all that sort of thing. What it's interested in is saying, OK, so you've got this sort of pornographer who sniffs a lot of coke and has a lot of threesomes, but what's really important to him is family and his daughter. And, you know, given Steve Coogan's background, all that sort of stuff, that's quite an extraordinary thing to say. To say it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what kind of man this was. What was important to him was his family. And that's what brought him down. And that's what's important in life. And that's also what Winterbottom's interested in talking about in something like Every Day. And so, you know, it actually bears more similarities with films like that than perhaps it superficially looks like. And I think the sell on the film is slightly strange because you've got quite a Tony Fiorino look, you know, got the Partridge thing and all that. But sort of when you sit down and think, what is this film saying? What it's saying is an apology for Steve Coogan's life. I mean, I don't think he has to apologise for it, but that's what it is, in fact, and that's very interesting.
It's an apology for Paul Raymond's life as well. I mean, I enjoyed the film and I liked the fact that it wasn't playing lots of games with the biopic format like, say, 24-Hour Party People did. And I liked the kind of melancholy note that it kind of ran on a lot of the time. I worry that it was glossing him a bit. There's a bit there where it says he's been accused of running a prostitution ring as well, which he denies. And you think, but then was he or wasn't he? Who's telling the truth here? Did that bug you, Henry?
I think there's an element of that. The thing that bugged me a little more was the games that they played in terms of the style of the shooting. Like they do this thing where they go through the different eras and they'll start shooting in black and white in the 50s.
50s is black and white.
And then 60s is very kind of modish, like Austin Powers. And all of those tricks and different styles really like clagged it up, I felt. So you had these great performances from people like Coogan and Imogen Poots, I thought was fantastic as his daughter.
Absolutely brilliant.
And you're right, there's a really nice family story at the heart of it, but it's kind of dressed up in this gaudiness that Paul Raymond probably loved, but it just isn't to my taste and was too frenetic, I think, to really get that family drama across.
If it is about the family, then the Imogen Poots character is key to it. And that could have easily been this kind of bleating, pathetic, tragic figure. But she does give it a kind of dignity as well, doesn't she?
I think it's an absolutely astonishing performance. But I don't think it's I don't think it's actually about the family. I think what they're saying is it's about family. In fact, the fact is that it's not really about family. It's also about kind of, you know, amazing threesomes and girls with great tits and all that sort of thing. I think the message of this film is, So what that you do, that you're interested in all this kind of crazy sex stuff? What it's really about is family. And I think it doesn't come off because you don't quite believe that.
No.
And also, Coogan's persona is so mingled with Partridge, and I know that's a really tedious thing to say, but I think what they've done here is they've made him more of a Partridge-y figure than they should, because, you know, at the end where it says, "And when he died, Paul Raymond was the richest man in Britain," it's a bit of a shock because they're playing him as a bit of a loser. And OK, so he's a loser in his family life. But in fact, he's an unbelievable winner. You know. And so to make it more dramatic and interesting and coasting a little bit on the Partridge thing, or, you know, even subconsciously, they're playing him like a bit of a buffoon. But he probably wasn't a buffoon if he was the richest man in Britain.
Think of me.
Or if it helps, think of me. Look at Paul, but think of me.
The look of love there. And we now move from one millionaire playboy to another. Iron Man 3 stars Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark, who is really Iron Man 3. Sorry for the spoiler. Anyway, we sent The Guardian's Henry Barnes down to meet Sir Ben Kingsley, who co-stars in the film as the evil Mandarin.
Nothing's been the same since New York. The experience things. And then they're over. I can't sleep. And when I do, I have nightmares.
If you're told at the beginning, this guy's unbeatable, you think, okay, well, I can go home now because nothing's going to happen. One of the first things, I haven't seen the film yet, but I know from the script that one of the first speeches or reflections that this wonderful hero has are all self-questioning, self-doubting.
Some people call me a terrorist. I consider myself a teacher. Lesson number one. Heroes. There is no such thing.
In terms of the Mandarin, most of what we see through him, particularly in the opening act, is through propaganda.
Absolutely.
And I wondered what it was like trying to deliver a character, but it's obviously a very one-note performance.
The key to giving him depth and layers is to try and bring to the camera and to his broadcasts that unshakable faith in his own version of the truth. I am destiny. I am the map of the future. I know the way. And by the way, I also know your civilization, and I can do this. Look, I've just turned it on its head.
Henry, Ben Kingsley almost set the tone of this film for me, because when he crops up, you think, how ridiculous. And then halfway through, you think, actually, he's very funny and he's striking just the right note for this. And I went in thinking this is going to bore the hell out of me, and came out actually really liking it.
I partially enjoyed it. I think it takes a good 45 minutes to get going. And then once Sir Ben comes into his own, then you can really start getting into it. I'm kind of really divided with the Marvel films in general, though, because they're getting increasingly well written. They're all in this kind of elaborate network of storylines that weave in and out of each other with the Avengers, etc., etc.
Yeah.
At the same time, I'm so bored of sitting through the credits for that kind of witty post-credit scene that might lead on to another film. Fed up with waiting for Stan Lee to pop up at some moment as well, in the inevitable cameo. I'm really fed up with Iron Man, the character, and I think Robert Downey Jr. is as well to some extent. You know, he's just become this smarmy, self-regarding to the point now where he's got anxiety attacks. And that's this kind of Batman-esque thing to bring it back to a real character rather than him being a superhero. And there's just so many elements of the franchise and Marvel Comics films in general that I'm bored of. It's difficult to watch even a good film like this, which it is. It's undoubtedly a good film, and actually take enjoyment from it.
I thought it was a good film in that I think Downey Jr. is a great casting choice, and an unlikely casting choice for the role of a costume-armoured superhero. But he does it very well, and I thought it was funny. It's got a kind of a rueful, wry, kind of playful quality to it that I really enjoyed.
Even if this is more lighthearted than, say, Thor or Captain America, I just think, what's the point in watching this? I know exactly where this is going to end, and it's going to end with him triumphant, as a superhero story should. But if you see enough of them back-to-back without any kind of threat or peril in them, there's no thrill for me.
I know exactly what you mean, but you're basically writing off 99% of all mainstream film entertainment if you go along with that. You know, the Western, John Wayne is always going to triumph.
No, I get that, but I think when you have someone like Shane Black who did Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, you wonder maybe is he going to throw a giant spanner in the works and give you something really shocking and exciting. Like Joss Whedon did with the Avengers to a certain extent. There was a major character in that was killed off, which the fans certainly weren't expecting. And I just think to sell this to me as someone now who's seen a lot of these films and presumably is going to see a lot more, you have to give me something that's really quite exciting and shocking, and this film just doesn't in that way.
Honestly, there's 100 people who want to kill me. I hope I can protect the one thing I can't live without.
Iron Man 3, they're sticking to the formula and not throwing a spanner in the works. For that, we must look to Richard Linklater's Bernie, a comedy about a mean old lady and a nice middle-aged funeral director, but before too long, one of these two characters will be dead.
Room service. Hi, just dropping by again, Mrs. Nugent. Pay my respects. Brought you some soaps and a little bubble bath to soothe you in the tub and some chocolate cupcakes for a late-night snack.
Come in.
Oh, it would be my pleasure.
Richard Linklater's true crime caper offers a kind of comic riff on In Cold Blood, framing the murder of a small-town matriarch as a mock documentary. Jack Black plays Bernie, the cuddly mortician, who becomes boon companion to Shirley MacLaine's sour old widow. In the meantime, Matthew McConaughey rears up among the talking heads to make sense of a murder most foul.
One time I got four teenagers to rededicate their lives to Jesus. But eventually I realized I was meant for other equally important things.
Catherine, would you like to have Bernie as your best friend?
Well, everybody in the film says how nice he is endlessly. Actually, he doesn't seem that nice.
No, there's
creepy.
Something fundamentally creepy about him.
Apart from the killing thing, he's also a bit odd. I mean, this is a great film, isn't it? It's a great little unexpected film that was released in America 2 years ago and suddenly come up here. I'm not sure why it's not a documentary, because you have this thing of mixing the talking heads, great, fantastically good, and the great people are the real townspeople who chat away.
How many of them are the real townspeople?
The majority.
Right, not Matthew McConaughey, unless he's moved from Beverly Hills.
But you see, and that's slightly jarred for me, because you do, I suppose it's a sort of intentional thing. And
suddenly you just think, there's Matthew McConaughey acting. And he is from Texas, but he just looks like an actor when he's set down among the real people.
And the stockbroker guy, it makes actors look a bit crap, which is an interesting route to go there. But it is terrifically good. I did wish it was a documentary on some levels. I suppose there's lots of reasons why it wasn't, and it does wrong-foot you in an interesting way. But there's too much indulgence of Jack Black. There's too much Jack Black singing. But
maybe
it is
too
really
much
good.
Jack Black off the leash. But Shirley MacLaine, who is known for really kind of chewing the scenery in many of her roles, very good in this.
Very good. She's very subtle, and I thought it was going to give it all the old Downton.
Or Terms of Endearment.
But she didn't.
Yeah, but Linklater's very much on Bernie's side, isn't he? Like, he's signed a petition trying to get the real Bernie out of prison, which the real Bernie is kind of charmingly described as like church camp, which, like, even in prison he's still doing this charm offensive, I guess. And, Shirley MacLaine really is the evil old woman with not a lot to do. But at the same time, you do think there's a hidden story there that I think Linklater on purpose just isn't showing us and doesn't want to show us, because you're supposed to go along with Bernie all the way and almost follow this groupthink about him.
He is interested in Bernie, but I almost thought what he was most interested in is small-town Texas life and that particular part of East Texas that is more southern than what we think of as Texas, and that it's very genteel, it's very formal. And there's the questions about, is he gay? And they're kind of not really wanting to sort of touch on that, because that's how they handle those kind of things in that sort of town. And all of that gave it a kind of nice texture that made me think that we don't really see a film about that world that's not the fish out of water comedy.
That's true, absolutely. And I think that's why I wished it was a documentary, because I wanted more of the authentic.
It could almost be an Errol Morris kind of film.
but that's what was fabulous, wasn't it? Was those little sound bites of the real people.
I think also Jack Black's performance in this is the reason why it's a good drama rather than a great documentary, in that Jack Black is someone who's weirdly likeable and completely unlikable at the same time for a lot of people, myself included. And I think he's perfect for this role, because he can just about go to that level where you're like, God, you're really irritating. But that works perfectly for someone like Bernie, who's supposed to be that.
And weirdly, McConaughey is that as well, in a very different way.
Yeah.
So the Linklater's good on using those kind of double-edged people.
Almost
and McClane, too.
But not quite, yeah.
But I think for me, that was the problem with it, is that Jack Black is just not... I mean, like, everybody's... All the town's ladies say, yeah, you were just desperate for a date with Bernie. It's like, actually, just really wouldn't. Whereas you see pictures of the real-life Bernie, he's quite a hunk, you know, or he was. You know, you would.
Before prison got to him.
Church camp.
There are people in town, honey, that would have shot her for $5.
Everybody's describing Bernie Tedder as an angel.
The nicest fella I've ever met.
He didn't do it.
He's an angel, all right. An angel of death.
That dog don't hunt.
Jack Black in the rather fine Bernie there. And now, after all of the murder and terrorism and pornography, we'll try to go out on a lighter note with In the Fog. It's the tale of two Belarusians who want to kill each other and go for a walk in the forest in the fog.
Я знал, что придете. Значит, вину свою понимаешь.
Sergei Loznitsa's existential war movie tramps through Nazi-occupied Belarus in the company of two partisans and a four-square railroad worker who may just have collaborated with the enemy. The railwayman protests his innocence, but the partisans want revenge. All three are about to become lost in a thicket of compromise, confusion, and impending violence.
Ладно, копай. Там видно будет.
Henry, whoever would have thought that collaborating with the Nazis would lead to so many problems?
Who the fuck is, and also, it looks great as well, which is my main positive point about this film. I thought it looked beautiful. In a similar way to that film Laura that came out, a similar subject matter as well, kind of immediately after the Second World War.
Well, the primeval forest, but then as the site of kind of great human tragedy and brutality.
Beauty as well in its own way in that tragic circumstance. It is strange watching this. I watched this almost straight away after watching Bernie. So you go from the kind of sunny, gospel-tinged environs of Texas to this, which is really dank and bleak and a difficult watch in many ways, also a much slower watch. And there was a small part of me that rather guiltily thought I'd love it if Jack Black just waded in and sang some sort of aria to keep them happy. I don't know. It's fantastically well made. It looks beautiful, but it's a little too heavy-handed and serious for my taste, I think.
It's a big, heavy dreadnought of a picture, isn't it, this one?
Yeah, there's a lot of shots of the back of men's heads as they're walking along for quite long periods.
Fantastic opening there, with the tracking shot of the men about to be hung going through the village square, which is a phenomenal piece that leads you to kind of expect more directorial flourishes like that. And then
and
it gets
incredibly
very
stylish.
Sturdy.
And you think, we're going to get lots of this, and there's going to be moments of drama, but it's going to be a really skillful piece of filmmaking in its way as well. And it is, but nothing ever really matches up to that incredible opening scene, I don't think.
For me, it didn't match up to his earlier film. It's directed by a Ukrainian director called Sergei Loznitsa, who was at Cannes a couple of years ago with a film called My Joy, which is about basically a long-distance lorry driver's kind of odyssey, this kind of Homeric odyssey through the former Soviet Union, where it's all kind of falling apart and it's just kind of sinking into lawlessness. And it's one of those great Cannes films that I went along, it was like a late-night screening of it, I knew nothing about it, and came out absolutely sort of galvanised by it, and so really wanted to see this. It doesn't quite add up. I like that it was about the sort of shadow history of the Second World War. We're so used to seeing, you know, the D-Day extravaganzas, and this is about the human cost of collaboration and the sense of a culture that's utterly compromised and corrupted by what it's gone through, that there's really no way out at all. And I thought that its claustrophobic nature, although that makes it kind of painful to watch, does get that across brilliantly well.
Yeah, and also that feeling that in the very immediate days after war, these kind of allegiances are shifting very, very quickly between sides. And you know, you don't know if your friends are still your friends or if enemies are going to suddenly take you in and look after you. And again, Laura did that very well as well. And there is an inherent drama in that idea that you can't trust anybody. You're on your own. And perhaps in a more dangerous situation than being in war itself.
I think with Laura, you know, Laura was a film that was easy to criticise for its sort of sun-dappled coming-of-age love bit.
A slight sort of magic realism
to it.
Whereas this doesn't have any of that.
Exactly. It could do, you know, Laura was a bit too much like that. This is a little bit too, you know, you're down in the twigs and it's quite bleak.
So your ideal World War II movie would be like a marriage of Laura and In the Fog.
I'd really love to see
that. With Jack Black playing Bernie in the middle.
Sold.
Да ведь ты выдал тех троих.
Я никого не выдавал.
А почему тебя не повесили?
The cost of collaboration in Sergei Loznitsa's In the Fog. And that's it from us. My thanks to the collaborators Catherine Shord and Henry Barnes. My thanks to the film crew for shooting us. We're back next week. See you then.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.